And today is September 12th, 2022. And I'm excited about this, actually, because here's something about Lisa. That's why I'm excited. First of all, thank you for accepting this invitation. And it's not as long as it could be. I just want to start with that. I picked the highlights, okay? So Lisa is an outstanding workshop facilitator, and I've seen her in action, and speaker. Yes. And again, I've seen her in action. And she's been featured at conferences all around the world. She had the honor of being selected to facilitate the White House Conference on Hispanic Excellence in Education. Mm-hmm. People say about Lisa that she brings a depth and breadth of experience, which is one of the reasons I value our time together so much. She works with executives in this way, with individuals from all backgrounds, careers, and industries. She is artful in her ability to ask insightful questions and supportively challenge and provocatively interact with her clients. I wish I had those qualities, provocatively interact. Maybe if you hang out with someone long enough, it'll rub off on you, right? They say. Her strong ethics, common sense approach, and temperament make her an ideal coach and consultant. Listen to this one. Get your pen ready. She is passionate about eliminating the words but, although, and however. But, although, and however. In English, B-A-H is bah. That's what we want to do with them. Bah. Eliminating them from conversation. Personally, ever since I met Lisa 20 years ago, I love to talk with her. I love to think with her. I like to write with her. I like to create with her and strategize with her. She is so clear and precise in her choice of words. And you are about to experience that now with her topic, creating conversations with centers, not sides. So, a big welcome to Lisa. Here is the opening. And you're on stage.
Thank you, Terry. Greetings to everybody. I'm excited to spend the next hour with you. As Terry was sharing, language, conversation is a passion of mine. And ever since I think I was a little kid, and the idea that we can connect, you know, with other people is a very powerful skill set. And I think those of us as coaches, you know, who get to do what we do, it's a gift. And I'm hopeful that in the next hour, you will walk away with at least one new idea or one new tool or one new thought-provoking idea that you will be able to utilize in your practice. And I look forward to hearing from you in that regard. Terry, if you would share the next slide. It's a quote by William Isaacs. And I think this is really at the center of our conversation, folks, for today. The idea that we have the opportunity to create and channel the energy of what could be considered to be differences and put it towards something new, something that has never been created before. And I think that that is a very powerful opportunity. And something that certainly excites me, you know, for that impact on other people. Whether you're a coach, a trainer, a colleague, you can utilize your skill sets to be creating and directing this energy in service to something new. It could be a new perspective. It could be a new choice for action. It could be a new agreement. I'm so sorry. I need to excuse myself for just one moment.
if you need to continue writing down the or taking a picture of the definition of dialogue, I'll leave it up here.
Thank you, and good morning or afternoon. I apologize.
Welcome back.
The idea that, you know, through conversation, you can help people, you know, to see something new is very powerful. We're going to get into that in some detail. You might be the only person, I just want to point out, with whom this type of conversation that we're going to be getting into in our time together today, you might be the only person with whom your clients and other people have this type of conversation. And I'm curious if you would, you know, if you feel like it, put in chat, has any client ever said that to you? That I don't have conversations like this with anybody else. I know I have had that, you know, happen, and it's a very powerful piece of feedback. Nachum, I see you have two. Anybody else, if that has happened, I'd love to hear it. If it has not happened, I would just say it has not happened yet. But I am confident that you will have that opportunity. Ah, that's great. Yep, the only one I trust. Yes, excellent. All right, this is very, very exciting. So you may or may not have heard the concept of dialogue. I don't want to assume everybody's familiar with it. If you are, excellent. If you are not, Terry, may I have the next slide, please? You will be able to see in some depth what is the benefit and some of the elements that we're going to talk about for using dialogue. The idea of increased understanding to me is, you know, central, of course, stronger relationships. In a business, and that's where most of my practice takes place, you can see for clients shorter cycle times. You can see increased growth, both personally at a team level or at an organization level. And curiosity grows, which of course leads to more discovery. And that is very powerful, you know, for the folks, your clients, and also the environment within which they work. We have, my partner and I have a law firm, a large law firm, international law firm, as a client, and they embraced several years ago, which was very progressive of them, the idea of coaching associates. And so they started this program, Partners, you know, went through some training and actually spent time coaching associates. They've had very fabulous benefit. An unexpected benefit of the process has been clients now request some of those specific associates or attorneys because of the way they speak to them, and most importantly, because of the way they listen to them. And when they have meetings, the outcomes are more substantive and more powerful. So I think that's exciting, at least from my perspective. If it can work for attorneys, then it can work for, I think, you know, anybody on the planet. That's my thought. Okay. Next slide, Terry, please. There are seven dialogue skills that we have identified. We think they're important to master. I'm going to make the assumption that you all are already quite skilled at listening and quite skilled at sharing your thinking in an appropriate way, especially with clients and colleagues. We are going to just take a brief look at the other five dialogue skills for the purpose of identifying, you know, how you might strengthen your application of any of these skills, how you might leverage what you already do well, and how you might incorporate any of these particular skill sets if you do not currently utilize them in a purposeful way. So let's look at these, and let's start with focus. because that's, I think, where it all begins. Next slide, please, Terry. The idea here, as you see, and as you know well, I'm sure, about focus, it enables you, when you're working with your client, of course, to pay specific attention to intention. And it enables the client and or you, if you're working like with a colleague, to put attention on the topic at hand. So intention and attention. You can use, you know, focus and language that supports focus to clarify beliefs. And of course, feelings and intentions. Very important for us in Sun, it allows you to reflect on being. So how am I showing up? I'm sure you have had the occasion, you know, to share some feedback with someone, whether it's real-time feedback or if it's something that you have collected with the client's permission. And the client oftentimes will say, well, they misunderstood. You know, that's not what I meant. No, I didn't mean for that to some kind of language of that sort. Okay, it's not what you meant. That is how they felt. So, how can you adjust what you are doing or how you are being in order to get the results that you want? And a question, you know, which you may use already, you know, with your clients, I don't know. What results do you want? Number one, or what were you thinking when you told so-and-so that you thought that idea was stupid? How did you imagine John would react? What did you think Sally would say? And often then you can get into some kind of a clarifying conversation wherein the person may be willing, you know, to readjust or to adjust their behavior so that is more aligned, their intention is aligned with their impact. There's a tool, you may use something like it. It's a beliefs, behaviors, and results matrix. I'm happy to share it. If you've not seen it, you can just let me know. And you can help your client to think through their behaviors and their results, you know, prior to coaching, or the old way, if you will, and then behavior and results in the new way. And also there's a beliefs column which allows them to adjust their thinking in support of the new behavior. So focus is where it all begins, I would suggest. Sometimes people, this last question I quite like, because human beings fascinate me. You know, it is rare. We can be very gracious and very giving and very selfish. We rarely behave in a way on purpose that is to our detriment. And so, if somebody is engaging in behavior that does not serve them, you would think, on its face, they're getting feedback. This is not what people want, not what their boss wants, not what the organization wants. Then why are they doing it? And I like to ask my clients, when I'm made aware that that's the case, what is your reward for thinking and behaving in this way? And sometimes they look at me and say, what do you mean? And I'll say, well, you know, you're a smart person. You have gotten feedback that in order to be successful in this new position, for example, you need to pay attention to this and this, instead of hanging on to that and that, fill in the blanks, whatever it might be. So you've heard this before. I'm not the first person to say it to you. Why are you still doing it? And a lot of times then I'll get a very quizzical. Oh, well, I'll have to think about that. And say, okay, you know, you may think about that, and then we'll see where that takes us. Because clearly it is not serving you in this position, in this place, at this time. Anyway, I'm interested in your thinking about that. Is there anything, any question about that piece in terms of focus before we move on? Any reaction or thought?
I agree, Lisa. I mean, it's a, it's start at the end, right?
With what you want. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We can revisit this, of course, as we move forward. Terry, I'm going to go to, if we can, the next slide, which has questions on it. And of course, your questions, you know, can be very powerful and help, you know, to surface commonality, as you see here, you know, areas of difference, if that's applicable. Strong questions can help you get to strong solutions, and it can bypass defensiveness if you are skillful in the way you phrase your questions. At the end of the day, you know, we want people to hear us. You know, we want people to be supported in coming up with their own answers and looking at things in a different way. So these are two of the prompts that I like to use. They work well for me. You may have some that you're fond of. Help me understand, you know, is a pretty straightforward preamble. What result did you anticipate? I mentioned that earlier when you told John that you thought he was a fill in the word. I don't want to offend anybody, but what you thought of this. Sometimes, depending on the group, I am very willing to put myself out there and say, I'm confused. I thought we were trying to, you know, get everybody on board, you know, with this new idea. How does antagonizing the key client group achieve that? And then I'm just quiet. So, you know, being able to come up with your questions, I'm sure you have your favorites. If anybody wants to share, I should look in the chat and see what people wrote previously. Any favorite questions that anybody wants to share for the benefit of your colleagues?
Sometimes they said, I don't know. I'm coming here because I want to know.
Yes.
And then I like to ask them, I'm playing with them, like, if you would know, what would be the answer? So it's something that's very, they are looking at me so strange, and then they are bringing the answer. They can say something. Suddenly they can find the answer in themselves. So I'm playing with this question.
Yes. Yeah, sometimes, you know, they look to you. Like, you must be the keeper of all the magic answers. So what should I do? I don't know. You know, I know what I might do, but I'm not you. So let's look at what you said you wanted to achieve. Let's look at the possibilities. You know, it's interesting. I think culturally, many organizations, certainly, and in many countries, if you have the benefit of working with smart people, and I'm going to guess that you do, then smart people feel compelled to have the answers. And I'm sure you may have noticed, you may have been in a meeting, and if you were to measure the number of questions asked versus the number of statements made, I think you would find that the number of statements far outweighs the number of questions. Why? I find that, in my experience, it's because smart people don't want to give the impression that they don't know. And so you have 10 smart people sitting in a meeting. Nobody asks the question. They leave the meeting with 10 different interpretations of what it is that they're supposed to do, only to have a follow-up meeting because 10 people did not have the same understanding. It's very fascinating to me. So my point about the questions is, you know, to, you know, not be afraid to ask a question. Somebody says, I think we should do such and such. Okay. Walk me through that. How do you think that will play out? What reaction are we likely to get from the client? What other options do we have? Given the direction that we have been tasked, you know, with achieving, how might that work? Terry?
I'm thinking in the background as you're speaking about the technique I learned in NLP called chunking sideways, which takes it the onus of the pressure, and it takes it away from that. It takes it away from the ego. Because if someone says, I'd really like to know what you think about chocolate versus vanilla ice cream, and you say, well, I can tell you what I think the difference is, but I'm curious if there was a really wise person who knew about chocolate and vanilla ice cream, and you were in their presence, what would they say about this? And they can more easily come up with that because it works even for me, and I know the technique, I know the trick. Mm-hmm. So is that Excellent. An alternative strategy?
Of course. Yeah, I think, you know, here's what I have found, you know, in terms of language. You know, we all have our own go-to phrases. And if we had more than, you know, 60 minutes together today, I would look forward to hearing, you know, Leanne and Ruth and, you know, Nachum and everybody's, Alfonso's go-to phrase. Because we have them. And what's interesting, I think, is that in our work, you know, certainly with clients or with, you know, our clients with their colleagues, it doesn't take long for people to, you know, start hearing what I would call cues to be interactive or to think differently. And so it is possible to change the nature of conversations that your clients may be having with others, just because of the nature of the conversation you have with them. And Terry, the idea that you're talking about, you know, the wise person, or if somebody had a video camera and was, you know, just watching this, what might they see or how might they look at it? Those are, you know, all ways that you can help the person to move forward and let go of, you know, the way that they have, quote unquote, always done it. What does all this mean for you? You know, when people start asking the questions themselves, yes, I love that. And, you know, that, again, can be a direct impact of you, from you, you know, because you ask a question a particular way. We'll get to one idea in the next slide. The only thing I was going to share with you here before I leave this is the other question that I quite like when somebody is stuck. I can't do that, Lisa. That wouldn't work around here. You don't know how things are. You know, some like type phrase, right? We've all heard it. Okay. Sounds like you've given that a lot of thought. So you know your environment better than I do. I just have one question to ask you. What is the consequence of doing nothing? Because that's the big buildup here, folks, right? That's what they're telling you. Thanks a lot. Yeah, good advice, good idea, good questions. You really, you know, made me think I can't do it. Okay. What is the consequence of doing nothing? I have gotten a lot of mileage out of that question. I share it with you freely, and I hope that it would be successful for you as well. Yes, or nice Alfonso. Yeah, well, I guess you're stuck then. Yep, sounds like it. Enjoy that place. The Arvinger Institute has a series of books. One of them is, they're all great. The last one is Outward Mindset, which is excellent. If you've not seen it, you know, I strongly recommend the three books. The first one is called Leadership and Self-Deception, Getting Out of the Box. And Alfonso, your phrase here makes me think of it because they talk about all of us creating boxes. And in our box, we're the expert. We're right. We have all the answers. And some people, you know, have a short-term lease on the box. They're willing to change it up. Some people have, you know, the box mortgaged to the hilt. It's fully furnished. Everything's in it. They're not moving, you know, for anything. It's going to be a tough one. And so, you know, depending on your client, different things may work, obviously, you know, in different ways, right? You'll find the best approach for you. Terry, may we please have the next slide?
Time for a question or comment. Yes, I would be delinquent if I didn't mention the article that Dr. Michael Marks and I wrote called Do You Give Your Clients Advice? Because if you answer that question, you are actually only impacting a part of the brain, because the brain offloads when it hears someone else's comments. And it only includes, and correct me if I'm wrong, Michael, please, it only includes the temporal part of the brain, the neocortex. And it doesn't include the emotional, the limbic system, and it doesn't include the somatic. So we're supposed to, as coaches, work with the whole person, not just the head brain. So advice doesn't work for us in our profession.
And if you want to give advice, or if the person wants to get advice, the best you can do, because they can't decide on that device while they're hearing it. So the best you can do is get them to repeat it, reflect on it, and then decide on what they've said themselves. But they can't decide on the advice while they are hearing it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Our brains are so fascinating. Okay. Thank you, folks. So questions, you know, very powerful, of course. You know, good to have the questions that work for you. I have a list of questions that I like to share with my clients, and I tell them, you know, there are 100 questions here. When we meet next, you might tell me, Lisa, I could not say number 17. People are going to think I've lost my mind. Okay. That gives you 99 other questions from which to choose, you know. Find something from a language perspective that you are willing to try, you know, that you could potentially utilize to achieve the results that you've told me are important to you. So I think, you know, encouraging people, you know, to explore new language for the purpose of achieving a new result is a strong one. Okay. Challenge. Challenging is important. Yes, you are supportive. Yes, you know, you create a safe space. Yes, you know, people can have conversations with you that they don't have with anybody else. And part of that is provoking thought and helping people to expand their perception and, you know, demonstrate an openness, as we were talking about earlier. So some ideas, how might someone else see this? How else can you achieve the result that you said is important to you? Sometimes if somebody's really going down the spiral staircase and not in a good way, how does thinking this way help? All right, so what's another alternative? What's another option? My favorite is to say, when somebody tells me something, that's one idea. What's another? And I think it's important for all of us to remember that acknowledging is not agreeing. So it's not as if you're reinforcing the fact that somebody just said something that you know absolutely is not going to work for them because of what they've shared with you. But hearing them, making sure they know you were, that you heard them is important. And again, it doesn't take long for somebody to then go into their own mental space, as Michael is pointing out, to then think something through. So, you know, I remember working with a client, you know, who worked for one of the Alphabet agencies that shall remain nameless. And we had been working together for a couple of months, always on the phone. We never met in person. And he was sharing with me on this particular call something that he had done. It was something with his team, and he was telling me what he did. So he told me. And I said, that's one approach. And I didn't even get to the what's another part before he just burst out laughing. And obviously I wasn't with him, you know, so I said, what's so funny? What's going on? He said, I know when you say to me, that's one idea or that's one approach, what you're really saying is I should come up with at least another couple, because that one, and I won't tell you the word that he used to describe the, you know, my condemnation, if you will, of his one idea. But he got it. You know, he knew that I was pushing him to think more broadly. And, you know, that's something that is possible. You know, your clients can, and I would suggest probably do, you know, expand their thinking and expand their language after working with you. Would it be appropriate? Who do you want to be in this situation? Oh, who do you want to be in this situation? Potentially, Nachum. I mean, for me, I had no vested interest in whatever direction he was going. I did have a vested interest in having him expand his universe of choices, because he tended to just go with the first thing that came into his mind. And that was something that he had identified to me he wanted to work on. So there was that. The idea, the language, Alfonso, back to your point, and I see, Leanne, that you do use it. Who do you want to be in that situation? If that language is credible and it works for you, then obviously use it. I have to say, for me, I would likely not use that exact language. I might likely go to, how do you want people to experience you? In that circumstance, what are you hoping to create? I might not use, again, that exact language, but that's me. And I think the other piece of all of this that I would like to make sure you take away is you want to select and use language that's credible for you. Nice. Getting the person to describe the relationship or the circumstance, the impact, any of those things, very rich. And in that conversation, as that person is sharing that with you, you may likely find points of leverage, you know, that can help them. To Michael's point, they, you know, can often come up with ideas or, you know, aha moments as they're talking something through once they've said it and let it sit. And then they start feeling it. So following up with some feeling kinds of questions after something's out on the table could also be a useful approach. Other thoughts? Welcome, Alfonso. Nachum, the only point I want to make sure that I'm clear about is the first idea is just that. It's a first idea. It's not the only possible idea. So you might go back to the first idea in the end, and it might be fabulous. And it is one idea. My point would be to help people to get comfortable exploring multiple ideas for the purpose of, you know, getting the best one. So, challenging, we've got that. Negotiating, Terry, if we could. Negotiating is another topic, another skill set. Somebody tells you what they want, and then you start working, and you're supporting them, and they're identifying ideas. And then, you know, to help them think through everything that's now on the table, because we pushed and we supported getting more than one idea. All right. So let's revisit intention. Yes, very nice. You know, which possibilities attract you? What do you think you might want to do? Revisiting the intention. You told me in the beginning that you wanted a solution that would do X. When you consider the different ideas that you've generated, which of these best accomplishes the result, you know, you said you wanted to achieve? It can also highlight areas on which you can build. And then, of course, you know, you might just ask some additional questions. The ever popular, you know, what would happen if, or how do you think such and such? What are the common elements in the ideas we've already reviewed? Which of these, you know, do you feel most strongly about? Anything that helps the person to think through what it is that they might be, you know, interested in pursuing, and to ensure that you have a common understanding. And then the next piece, Terry, would be to commit. You know, in a business setting, oftentimes people have a conversation. We're having a meeting to discuss X. Great. 60 minutes later, okay, got to run, I have a conference call, or I have this, or I have that. Everybody walks out. What's the next step? Who's going to do it? By when? You know, all of that just oftentimes evaporates. And then next Tuesday you meet again, and you know, you say, well, what happened with such and such? Well, I thought Susan was going to do it. No, Steve said, you know, that he would, but Steve wasn't there. Yes, that's why we gave it to him. You know, it's that type of thing, by or tough. You know, it's that type of situation that can be avoided if you can help people to commit, to capture the promises made, the understandings, you know. So to wrap up, we heard several good ideas on how we could approach the client with such and such. The meeting's Tuesday. Somebody walk me through what our approach is going to look like, or let's be clear who's going to do what before we have the, you know, kickoff on Monday at noon. Or again, any like type question that seeks to clarify who is doing what. And if you're having a conversation with your client, then it's likely the client. That's fine. All right, I heard you express interest in X, and it seemed like you have a lot of energy about that. That's exciting. What are you going to do next? When am I going to see that? We have a meeting on the calendar in 2 weeks. What are you planning to bring to me? Or some other structural support that helps the person identify what they are going to do next. You know, some of my clients are very faithful about journaling, about taking notes, about using action plans. Some prefer to be more free thinking. You know, whatever works for the person, although as we all know, research shows that having a written plan does increase your chances, you know, for accomplishing the goals. In any event, you know, helping the client to get to move forward and or in the circumstance of, you know, training someone, working with them to get the results, obviously, that they want, you know, fabulous for all of us. And I think that's one of the reasons why we do what we do. So we get the commitment and then everybody's happy. At the end of the day, Terry, if we could just look at the next slide before we open up for questions and some examples. Using dialogue, we have seen in an organization, we have seen the entire tenor of meetings change. We have seen results, you know, tremendous results going in and doing trainings, not just coaching, but trainings on dialogue and using this language at, you know, like a staff level, a manager level, and a leadership level, so that people begin, you know, to create these conversations with centers, to harness the energy that everybody has about why they're there in the first place, to recognize that they have choices and they can be involved in this very powerful, you know, creating and discovering process. Not only can they make choices, they can make mistakes, they can choose again. So it is ongoing. And the growth and the learning, you know, that occurs with it is very self-empowering. And again, I strongly encourage you, based on my experience, you know, to, you know, support folks in doing this. It is something that gives people a tremendous amount of, you've heard the term, of course, locus of control. I mean, that people feel then like, hey, I'm in charge here. I may not be able to affect that, but I can affect this. And I can be in charge of the way I show up. And I can be responsible for the way I language my thoughts and my responses and my questions. And so, you know, recognizing that somebody has that opportunity is very powerful. And just one more reason why, you know, they're probably working with you in the first place, you know, because they trust you to create that kind of environment for them and to enable that type of growth. Those are my main points. I saved 10 minutes. To hear from you, you know, ideas and questions and thoughts, anything that you would like to share, I am very excited to hear it. Terry?
I wrote down some fabulous questions that I never thought to ask. And then I was reminded of Giuseppe Melli, who was kind of a mentor for me years ago. And he asked me to identify my top 10 favorite coaching questions. Oh, what fun! How I love questions. I went through, I picked the 10, I shared it with him. He said, may you never ask those again. I said, what? He said, well, if these are your favorites, that means you use them a lot. Why not be in the moment with the person and see what comes up instead of going into your database and retrieving what you already asked? And I'm like, oh. Mm-hmm. But I still have favorite questions.
Yes, of course. Oh, that's fabulous.
So that was good.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. That doesn't invalidate anything you've offered me today.
No. I think it is important, obviously, to be in the moment and, you know, there, and again, we all have to be authentic, right, to ourselves. Yeah. You know, I have had some, you know, interactions with clients. I don't know if everybody is familiar with Kim Scott's book, Radical Candor. If you are, excellent. If you're not, I highly recommend it. If you're not a reader, you know, check out the YouTubes. You know, there are a couple, especially with her and her dog in New York. It's like 2 minutes and it gets the concept very clearly. The point being, you know, sometimes being very straightforward in a, oh my God, kind of way is what's called for. And if you can do that with candor and care, as she talks about it, it can have a tremendous impact. Other thoughts? Denise, Ruth, have I stunned you into silence? Oh, you're muted. Sorry.
I'm a listener.
Aha. Okay, with nice flowers, actually.
Yeah.
No, it's a dead one.
Well, it's very much a Socratic approach in many ways. It's open-ended questions, which is dialogue. Yeah. So I appreciate all the ways that you kind of brought it to a round spot, as opposed to having sides to it.
Yeah. Well, of course, we have to credit William Isaacs for that. But it was very powerful when I first read that quote, you know, because for any of us who work in business, of course,
right,
you know, that is often the, you know, the mainstay, right? You know, who's going to pitch this idea? Whose side are you on? Who's going to win the debate? And having a conversation of this sort is a new concept for a lot of.
Well, it's definitely different for groups. I've been in business as well, so I can remember how I approach certain things when you're trying to persuade as well, mm-hmm. without telling them what to do.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Ruth, sorry.
Yeah, thank you very much, Lisa. This has been helpful. I appreciate the 7 steps. To look at those 7 steps as a way to frame some of the questions and the flow, mm-hmm. you know, through the coaching dialogue as well.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah. Very helpful. And I haven't, I read years ago parts of Crucial Conversations. This initially seems to offer more clarity to me. I haven't revisited Crucial Conversations for a number of years, and but I like this format.
Good. I'm glad you find it useful.
Hi, Lisa. The peak for me was, and that's one good idea. I can imagine that everyone you've coached has gone back and run meetings or responded in that way as a favorite question. It's hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm imagining, too, that it's a great question for teens in one's life, a parenting question.
Ah, that's right. Well, you know, I have no first-hand experience with short people or teenagers. I have no kids, but absolutely with the, you know, groups of folks, people respond very quickly, you know, Charlotte. They learn too. Now, sometimes your client, they need to have a strong skin, because I'm put in mind of a CFO who I was working with, and, you know, she had grown up on the finance side of the house. So, you know, she tended, people kind of came to see her all day long. Janet, how do you do this? Janet, what do I do about this? And she would answer. And that meant, that was very efficient, she thought, but it meant that she didn't have time for what the board really wanted her to be doing, different projects. And so we came to an agreement. For 2 weeks, she was going to ask at least 3 questions when people came to her door, before she just blurted out the answer. And so a week in, I called her to see how she was doing. And, you know, so I asked Janet, how's it going? And it was silence for a minute. And then she said, they're laughing at me. And I said to myself, uh-oh, this might not end well. I said, what do you mean they're laughing at you? She said, well, you know, they're coming to the door. They knock on the door. Janet, what do I do about the general ledger? Then I start to say, what do you think you should do about the general ledger? How do you think, you know, how did Bob handle it? Whatever, right? And I said, so what do you want to do? And she said, well, they're already laughing, so I might as well keep doing it. I'll see you next Friday. And so I came in the next Friday, and I said, you know, I'm thinking, you know, this could be the end. But I said, so, how's it going? And she said, they stopped laughing. Now, they're still coming. You know, they knock on the door. Janet, what do I do about the general ledger? But now they say, I think I should talk to Bob about such and such, and I'm thinking I might do this. Am I headed in the right direction? 2 weeks, and the team had already evolved into some thinking for themselves. So it can be done. Yes.
Lisa, that reminds me of something I said to a couple of clients. They said, they're laughing at me, and they're asking, why the sudden change?
Uh-huh.
And they say, well, I hired this business coach. And so I'm just, now I'm recommending this. It's like, if they start laughing at you, blame it on me. Because, you know, Lisa, what happens is I get clients this way.
Ah, fabulous. Okay.
You know, like, oh, really? Such a positive change? I'll hire Michael Marks. And it's just kind of fun.
Yeah, oh, that is very fun. Thank you for sharing that one. Any other thoughts, comments, questions, reactions? I have like 5 minutes left. I could give you a gift of 5 minutes, Terry, if there's nothing else.
It reminds me, Lisa, I was trying to re-Google the name of the book I read a while ago.
Uh-huh.
It's a relatively new book about the CEO of a log company in Canada or North America that all of a sudden, that was a teller. He used to tell people, do this, do that, and people would stop by his door and they'd just do this and this and this and that. And then one day he became ill with a very rare malady that impacted very strongly his voice, and he could not speak. Ooh. And he had to adapt, to readapt again his style of leadership into speaking as little as possible. So he started to ask, so they would ask him, what should I do? And he would say, well, what do you think you should do? Say, well, I think I should do this and this and this. And then he would say, just do it.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And it changed the whole culture of the company. It's a very good book. I was trying to find out the name again, but I'll find it by the end of the 5 minutes.
Oh, okay.
And thank you very much.
You're welcome very much.
I think that doing that favor for a group is enormous because it spreads the responsibility and the thinking to everyone, and it relieves the central person of the heavy responsibility of always coming up with the right answer. So it's a beautiful solution for everyone.
Yes. One of the things that I often tell senior executives, you know, when I'm working with them, you know, we're trying to get them to embrace that notion, right? And, you know, I say, look, I recognize that there are certain things that have to be done. And, you know, you as the senior person, if you're in the big office, you can describe what you need. Maybe it's a board mandate. Maybe it's, you know, there are legal issues. Maybe there are, you know, there are just different reasons, the must-dos, what has to be done. Put it to the folks and let them come back to you with the how. Then they will have a vested interest in the process because they have helped create it. You know, you can lay out the criteria so they don't feel gamed. And then you have to take a big step and a leap of faith somewhat to be able to say, I will accept any solution, any approach that meets these three criteria, whatever that it is. Mm-hmm. And when they come back to you with it, then you need to absolutely do that so your credibility is intact and the results can be amazing.
So you can, you know, lay out the what has to happen, what you need, and have the folks figure out the how. And that is a very powerful combination.
Well, talk about amazing. And you've done it again, an amazing presentation. It sounds like there was a lot of value garnered and a lot of further reflection that shall happen. So thank you, Lisa.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Terry.
On November 14th, Nahum Katz, raise your hand. He is the speaker with the topic of intent, the energy behind action, crucial or fundamental. That sounds intriguing. I'm going to be there. Have a wonderful couple of months, everybody. And if I get to see you at the retreat, fabulous. I'm going.
Thank you,
Brenda. Bye, everybody.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you.